James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yeah, I know. I know. Just another liberal on the radio, right? The airwaves are just polluted, and the netwaves are just polluted with lefties on the radio, right? And Guy James Show, just another one. That's all there is on 24/7 on terrestrial and internet radio. Left-wing people, the left-wing media, the liberal media, everybody knows we control everything that goes on in the media here on the left, right? Hey, how are you today? Glad to have all of you along with us. I'm feeling in a particular mood today, just kind of really laid back today. I don't know why exactly. It was normally when showtime comes, I'm up and pumped and ready to go. Today, I'm just kind of sitting here going, well, let's hope it goes okay. Isn't that a picture of confidence today? Oh, it's just one of those days. You have one of those days once in a while where you're just kind of in a funky mood and you just are content to just kind of roll with the punches and go with the flow and all of that. Normally, I'm a guy that swims upriver, but today I'm just kind of floating along, just sitting here close to the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, pretty close to the Gulf of Mexico. The weather's nice. It's hot, of course. Not as hot as it is in some places around the country. My God. Some of you people are having terrible, terrible weather. It's rubber stamp weather here right now. You can just pretty much in this area rubber stamp the weather 7 days a week right now. 95, 95, 95 every day with possible afternoon thundershowers. That's it. A low of about 77, 76. That's it. You can just rubber stamp it every single day. You can predict it. You got the old afternoon showers that roll in off the Gulf once in a while, and they last for 20 minutes, and they're gone. Just enough to get your car all screwed up after you washed it and had it all cleaned up, but not enough to keep the grass green, if you know what I mean. Well, here we are today, and we do hope you'll join us here on the program. I do want to thank Billy Shears, music director of the Guy James Show. Want to wish him well. Billy's been a little under the weather as of late. Don't worry, he's doing okay, but I just want to say hello to Billy and to Bob and to Mark and all of our friends here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm very proud of the fact that we're on Head On Radio Network. We've got a great group here. We've got a very informative group. We've got a savvy, well-informed group. Most of all, well-informed. You can watch your Hannitys, you can watch your Limbaughs, you can watch your Alan Combs, you can watch a lot of these people, you can listen to them. And their staffs have what they call their stacks ready for them every day. They walk in and sit down, and that's not to say they all don't work hard. Some of them do. But it's different when you walk in every day and you got a staff of a dozen or so, and they've prepared everything for you to do today. They've arranged the interviews for you. They've written the questions for you, made out everything that you're to talk about today. And all you got to do is just sit down, put on the old headphones, open up the mic, and go for it. That's not how we do things here on the Head On Radio Network. We work very hard to keep you well informed, to keep you abreast of the issues, to give you the real truth of the issues, to dig inside all of the political issues of the day and give you the nitty-gritty and what really is happening, not just what somebody's opinion is. You can always count on the truth here on the Head On Radio Network. Always. That's our hallmark. That's what we stand on. We're proud of that. We're very, very proud of that here in the Head On Radio Network. If you'd like to call the program today, we hope you will. You can do so by calling us toll-free at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Okay? You got it? We'd like to... like to thank Chuck, Charles, thank you. Thank you very much for taking this seriously when we were talking about fundraising the other day. I'd like to thank Stuart very, very much. And who else here? Somebody else I'm supposed to thank, and by golly, I'm afraid I've misplaced that right now. No, I haven't. Suzanne. Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you very, very much. We're going to provide you. I had somebody, and Stuart did, advised me that maybe I'm going about this the wrong way, that maybe not, that I'm not keeping you well enough informed, that maybe you need to know more about our fundraising activities and feel a little more confident when we do that. So I'll try and get to that a little later on in the program today, let you know where we're at, what we need, and what our deadlines are and so forth, okay? So I'll hold up my bit of the bargain on that. 866-546-5254. As live radio goes, we had a guest lined up for you today, and because of illness, she had to cancel out at in the last few minutes before the program, but we're going to go ahead with the discussion anyway. What I'd like to concentrate on, at least with your cooperation, for the first hour of the program today, or maybe close to an hour, who knows how long a conversation will last, is the vanishing middle class. And that term, the vanishing middle class, the disappearing middle class, whatever you want to call it, is something you'll get great argument from the right on. The right thinks that that's a fallacy, that the right, that the middle class is not disappearing, that the middle class is not distressed and in trouble. And nothing could be further from the truth. Of course, to dispute that fact, it fits right in with their agenda of, helping the rich and screw everybody else. That fits in perfectly with their agenda. So don't be surprised if you read, from the Heritage Foundation and AEI and people like that, that we are promoting a fallacy here and saying the middle class is vanishing. I think if you have eyes, if you can see, if you can hear, if you can listen to the news, if you can digest the news, the actual truth of what comes across on radio, TV, and talk to your friends. Just talk to your friends, unless you live in a high-class, filthy, rich neighborhood. Just talk to your friends and take a look at the retail stores right now where you shop. You'll see what I'm talking about. Take a look at the restaurants in some of the places you live right now. I live in a place that is polluted with restaurants. They're begging for business right now. They never beg for business, but they are right now, offering two entrees for one, special deals everywhere you look. Chain restaurants, big chain company-wide restaurants, your Olive Garden, your Perkins, your Outback Steakhouses, places like that have chains all over this great land of ours, working hard for business right now. And it's difficult if you don't live in an area. For example, I was just reading in our local newspaper here this morning. I live not too far from Naples, Florida. Our studio is, you might say, halfway between Naples and Fort Myers, Florida. Naples, Florida is the fourth most affluent And I'm talking about income. Area in the United States, number four. Someplace in Connecticut's number one, and San Francisco and another place in California is two and three, and Naples, Florida is number four. And if you'd ever drive down Gordon Drive or Gulf Drive in Naples, Florida, you would see what I'm talking about, a suburb of Naples called Port Royal. Happened to take a little boat cruise through there last Thursday evening with some friends. And, you know, homes, $35 million, very common. Homes, $3, $4, $5 million. They're buying up two of them at a time next door to one another, tearing them down and building the big houses, the $30 and $40 million mansions. A home there for $100 million. Very, very common. And the oddity is, you drive, you go through an area like that, whether by boat or by car, and you see this time of year in this area that most of them have their hurricane shutters up, are boarded up, and they're being house sat by somebody because it's not the primary residence of somebody. So here you have people with a $35 million house that has, lives in it a month a year, 2 months a year. Who knows how many residences they have around the world. Some of them are owned by big corporations. Many are owned by wealthy business magnates. And so you get a jaded view of what the rest of the country is really going through economically when you see this and when you talk to some of the people. And I know a couple of people live in this Port Royal area, for example, of Naples, Florida. Very wealthy gentlemen, very wealthy. And they're principal and landowners in this area and own several businesses in this area. And I know they do very well. And I know they talk to somebody like me and says, well, gee, I don't know. We talk to all of our friends and everything's just fine. We don't know what you mean. And I wonder when they tell me that, do they really not know what I'm talking about, or do they just want to cover it up and make me feel good? You know, they ask you questions like, well, gee, isn't your portfolio doing well? Ours certainly is. And all of our friends say they've never made so much money. Well, when you drive through a neighborhood like that and see what's going on, yes, I think you can probably agree, yes, they probably never had made so much money. But that's a different class. And anybody that doubts that we don't have more or less a caste system here in this country right now is very mistaken. And all you have to do is drive through a neighborhood like that to see exactly what I'm talking about. The middle class is vanishing. And although you don't hear it much through the mainstream media, the United States is on its way to becoming three separate nations for three separate groups of people. And I there's little doubt about that. The first group would be a small number of fabulously wealthy people that own a vastly disproportionate percentage of the wealth in this country, just like the people I just mentioned to you. The Bentleys and the Rolls sitting in the front drive and a 100-foot yacht out behind the $35-40 million house. Secondly, there's what's left of the great middle class, the people that built this nation, the people that have made this nation prosper, the people that have fought for this nation, died for this nation, built the infrastructure of this nation, the great middle class, the union people in this country. These are the people who are working more and more and more and benefiting less. They're working longer hours, they're making lower wages, they're getting fewer benefits, and they're becoming an endangered species. They truly are. And third, of the three groups that there are in the country right now, there are those who are in abject poverty, people who are going hungry, people who are sleeping under bridges and on the streets, people that are losing their homes. Of course, many of the middle class are losing their homes as well. There's no denying, I don't think there's any denying, that there's always been a wealthy elite in this country. And there's always been a huge gap between the rich and the poor. But not since the Gilded Age, a century ago, have we seen such disparities in wealth and income, seen that gap become so wide in this country. Not since the days of the Mellons and the Carnegies and the Rockefellers and their fabulous wealth. And we think the Buffetts and the Gateses and this Mexican fellow now, we think they're fabulously wealthy, but none, comparatively speaking, in today's dollars, are any as wealthy as John D. Rockefeller was. I could be mistaken on that, but I don't think so. So this incredible wealth that we're seeing today is nothing new. It's always been with it, been with us here in this country. There's always been a spread. But there's usually just been a handful of people with incredible wealth. And we're seeing more and more and more attain that position in our society. And today, the richest 1%, not only 1% of the people, 1% of the people, one out of every 100 people in this country, own more wealth than the bottom 95%. That's an incredible number, an amazing statistic. And as you well know, we've talked about many times on this program, the CEOs of large corporations earn upwards of 500 times what their average employees make. That's obscene. You say that's good old-fashioned capitalism. Maybe so. If that's good old-fashioned capitalism for the boss to be making 500 times what the average worker is making, then there's something wrong with capitalism. And recent figures are literally astounding. And I've spent a good deal of time the past few days looking up some of these numbers, and I have to admit, doing a double take and have to do some double checking because I didn't believe it the first time. But the recent figures are showing that the nation's 13,000 wealthiest families, and after that little trip through Port Royal, Florida the other night, it seems like most of them are living right there. But the 13,000 wealthiest families, which make up only 1/100 of 1% of the population, 1/100, receive almost as much income as the poorest 20 million families in America. Think of that. 13,000 families receive almost as much income as the poorest 20 million families in America. There's something wrong there. And yes, I know there are sociological reasons for it. I know that. But there's something wrong with those numbers. And while the rich are indeed getting much richer and are receiving huge tax breaks from the Bush administration, the middle class is literally sinking, drowning, unable to keep its head above the water right now. And the unemployment rate is not going down, but it's staying around 4.5%. Actually, the numbers of unemployed are higher now than when Bush took office. We've not gained on the problem at all. And right now, the number of jobs being created is not keeping up with the increase in population. And perhaps the most disturbing of all is the fact that many of the jobs that we've lost are the better-paying jobs. And this is not news to you. The good jobs that are leaving this country, they're the good paying jobs, which you know, they're being replaced by positions that require an employee to ask, "Do you want fries with that?" Jobs that were previously held by high schoolers for part-time income are now being taken by adults as second or third jobs. Our manufacturing jobs are disappearing by the tens of thousands each year with no end in sight. Current unemployment figures, adult men, 4%. Adult women, 3.8%. And these are the ones that are still on the rolls, that haven't fallen off the rolls, that haven't run out of unemployment and so forth. We know there are very many who literally have given up. Caucasians is 3.9%. Hispanics and Latinos, 5.4%. African Americans, 8.2%. And teenagers, 15.3% unemployment. And no, it's not just a blue-collar problem. Even the white-collar sector is being affected because jobs are being lost to India, to the Philippines, to Mexico, to China, and other countries where wages are very, very low, where there's unfair competition. The NAFTA thing, and it was a disaster. And it's estimated that we'll lose another 3 million information technology jobs to those low-wage countries by 2015. And when you think about that, you think about the last decade where we were on such a kick in this country. Well, there's not going to be any more blue-collar jobs, so let's get everybody educated on information technology, the technology jobs. That's where the future is. That's what they've told us for the last 20 years. Everybody saw this lack of manufacturing job, this loss of manufacturing jobs coming. So let's everybody go out and go to tech school and get educated with information technology jobs. And lo and behold, those jobs are headed overseas. I don't think it's news to any of you that the mood among the working class right now is one of pain. It's one of anxiety. People are working longer hours to make less inflated adjusted dollars than they earned just 30 years ago. In 1973, private sector workers in the United States were paid on average $9.08 an hour. In 1973, today in real wages, adjusted for inflation, they're paid $8.33 an hour. Now you think about that. In 34 years, the wages for the private sector workers in this country have gone down. That's a loss of 8%. And what's happened to the rest of the expenses while the wages have gone down? You know, you've got China, you got Mexico, and other low-wage countries. They've received the benefit of American companies relocating hundreds of thousands of jobs in order to increase these companies' bottom line, and they've done so on the backs of the American worker. And they've done so with no penalty to pay. Maybe I've got the wrong idea about this, but I think about this every time I go by a corporate office of any kind of an American company, and I think it's laughable that a lot of American corporations fly the American flag in front of their offices when they've shown no allegiance to this country whatsoever. Ask General Motors how many jobs it's shipped to China and Mexico. Ask Ford. Ask all of them. How many jobs have you shipped overseas? And as a result of all this, we have the aberration of Walmart replacing General Motors. Think about this. Good United Auto Worker Union jobs. Good money. Those jobs being replaced now by the likes of jobs being a greeter at Walmart or a stocker at Walmart, a night stocker at Walmart. Walmart replacing General Motors as our largest employee. Walmart! I understand that people have to work at Walmart. I understand this. A more despicable company does not exist, in my opinion. The money they make off the backs of their employees, the Walton family, but that's a story for another day. You know how I feel about Walmart. But the employees there at Walmart, America's largest employees, they not only earn minimal wages, but they also receive only the barest minimal benefits of health care and prescription drug assistance. In fact, all of those jobs at Walmart, in many cases, are a drain upon the local economy. We hear stories that the Walmart people even train new employees about how to get public assistance because they know damn well that the jobs at their company do not provide a living wage. The healthcare problem is critical. Healthcare that was once provided by employers is now being paid for out of the pockets of the employees, or a good deal of it anyway. In fact, the increases in healthcare costs are actually rising faster than the wage increases workers receive, leaving them even further behind. Think about how many of you, your parents, and even you, if you're my age, Think about the time when you worked for an employer that, because of the great profits they made, were able to give you health care. You didn't pay anything for it, or a very minimal amount. And you were pretty well covered. Great insurance. I remember those days. Terrific insurance. Hell, they would pay for braces on your kids' teeth, your eye care, your dental care, almost everything. And still, they made a profit. But what has changed since those days? I'll tell you what's changed. The cost of health care. The out-of-control, spiraling cost of health care. Blame it on a lot of things, I know. But most of all, blame it on greed. Absolutely blame it on greed. And so our wages have not kept up with the cost of health care, and it's left many families even further behind. Many workers only have the barest minimal insurance that covers only the barest of services from the medical community. And that's to say nothing of pensions. How many millions of Americans are being stiffed on their pensions that they were promised by their employees, either not getting them at all or having them drastically reduced? How many employers have given golden parachutes to their executives after a bankruptcy and told the retirees to just go take a hike? The retirement security that millions of Americans planned on has now disintegrated before their very eyes. And it's now common to see people in their 80s working at Walmart or bagging groceries at the local supermarket. People in their golden years that have worked a lifetime, raised kids, put them through school, done their civic duty, been in the military, been good citizens, should be able to retire with dignity and enjoy some modicum of respect. Instead, many of them are toiling at jobs in their late 70s and their 80s. If they have the good health to do it. I don't think a lot of people understand that workers in America are forced to work the longest hours of any workers in the industrialized world. And the hours are getting longer. American workers are putting in more working hours than at any time since the 1920s. 65 years after the formal establishment of the 40-hour work week under the Fair Labor Standards Act, almost 40% of Americans now work more than 50 hours a week. And when you stop and think about it, if the middle class is having it tough, what about the 33 million people in our society who are living in poverty? That number up 1.3 million in the past 2 years. What about the 11 million people trying to make it on a pathetic minimum wage that's only recently been increased by a pittance? What about the 42 million who lack any health insurance at all? What about the 3.5 million people who will experience homelessness in this year? 1.3 million of them children. What about the elderly who can't afford the outrageously high cost of the prescription drugs they need that are left to die? And what about the veterans who are on a VA waiting list for their health care? This country needs to radically rethink our national priorities. I was thinking of this as I was watching some of that debate last night. I didn't really see a whole lot that was very encouraging to me. They talk, but there are no specific programs. There's nobody pounding on the lectern on the table and saying, by God, this is what I will do. This specifically is what I will push for if I'm elected as a president of the United States. This is what I will fight for in your name. I'm not seeing hardly any of that, are you? Rhetoric is all we're getting. Face the fact that the middle class is the backbone of America. and it cannot be allowed to disintegrate. We need to revitalize American democracy and create a political climate where government makes decisions which reflect the needs of all the people, not just the wealthy campaign contributors. We need to see the middle class expand, not collapse. You know, there was an old saying in this country, and I remember seeing it on billboards. I lived in Northwest Ohio, and now and then we would travel up to Detroit. And there were billboards that says, and many of you have heard this saying, particularly people my age, as General Motors goes, so goes America. Well, I would change that. As the middle class goes, so goes America. And if the middle class in this country fails, if it falters and if it fails, and is diminished in great numbers, this country will fail. You can bet on that. Because the relative few at the top that control most of the wealth cannot keep this country going. You need the masses to keep this country going. The poor will suffer if the middle class goes. Because who has helped the poor over the years with their contribution, your United Ways and all the programs, the charities and so forth? It's been the middle class, not the rich. That is why we talk about the great middle class. Because not only are they suffering, if the middle class suffers, the poor will suffer as well. And we're talking about a big problem. We plan to talk about that on and off throughout the day today. And we hope you'll join the program. 866-546-5254. We'll be right back.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
All this month at Cheney's, it's the Warfest Breakfast, a delicious combo of Cheney's favorites, including three strips of sizzling Guantanamo bacon, two eggs served sunny side up yours, hashed brown shirts fried to Aryan perfection, oil-drenched terrorist links, and you won't need a warrant for these waffles. So come with an appetite for weapons of mass destruction and leave quagmired in satisfaction. Eat at Cheney's. Don't torture yourself.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today. Always glad to have you along with us. Kind of our little informal gathering here every afternoon. You, me, and a few friends from all around the country and some of you around the world. Thank you for all your email and correspondence. I do enjoy hearing from you. I really do. And I try and read all the email and I try and respond as best I can. I got some interesting ones yesterday that I will try and comment upon a little later, particularly from John in Cape Coral. So, John, if you're listening, we'll try and comment on that just a little bit later. Something that did pique my interest quite a bit. We're talking about the vanishing middle class today. And as I mentioned before, you'll hear the people on the right say that that's a myth. It's been vanishing for 20 years now, 25 years, since Reagan started his war on the people, since he started his giveaway to the rich, and his takeaway from his reverse Robin Hood programs. This is exactly what they were. Steal from the poor and the middle class and give to the rich. That's exactly what happened. The old trickle-down thing that, it trickled all right. It trickled. It trickled from the pockets of the poor and the middle class right into the pockets of the wealthy. It just went the wrong way, that's all. But I don't know of anything, and like I mentioned today, you know, statistics are a bit dry. And by the way, let me give you a number, 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you. Statistics are a bit dry, and I've been looking at a lot of them the past few days. But one of the most interesting stats that I have found, everything hits us, each of us, a little differently. But this stat that I found, I thought was extremely profound. And I don't know of anything that's highlighted this situation any more than this. In 1970, and I want to do some comparisons between 1970 and today, where literally, with those two dates, we are talking about two different generations. We are talking about enough of a span of time to take a look at true differences between then and now. Just not a melding of a few years, but the two completely different generations. In 1970, the mother of a 16-year-old in 1970 had a smaller likelihood of being in the workforce than does the mother of a 6-month-old baby today. Think about that. In 1970, the mother of a 16-year-old was not as likely to be in the workforce or need to be in the workforce as the mother of a 6-month-old baby today. What a profound change in our society. When you stop and think about that, a lot of the societal ills that have befallen us in this country are for that very reason, because mom had to go to work. How many kids are at home after school? How many kids don't have as much time with mom? And I understand all these problems, and I know all the arguments probably against what I'm saying, but you'd never convince me that the white picket fence days with the June Cleavers and Wally and the Beeve and can't think of dad's name. But you'll never convince them. Some of the young people are going, what the hell is he talking about? That was an old TV show, Leave It to Beaver. But you'll never convince me that those days weren't better for the family than they are now. Dad was the wage earner, and I'm not talking about sexist things here. More than likely, Dad was the wage earner. And Dad would get home from work, family'd all sit down at the dinner table, eat together, discuss the day's problems, talk about the problems with the kids, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, their grades in school, all the things that families should talk about. It was a different time. It was a different atmosphere. And it's changed drastically. In the 30 subsequent years since 1970, the median family in this country has become a two-income household. In 1970, it was a one-income household. Now it is a two-income household. And you might think, well, and you hear this from people on the right all the time, well, with two incomes, Americans are wealthier, saving more money, getting more vacations, got iPods, got big screen TVs, got all these things. That's why there are two wage earners in the family now. This is not true. It is not true. In fact, the average male today, inflation adjusted inflation dollars, makes $800 yet less a year than his father did. Think about that. We're a nation that always says we like to leave our country in better shape than we found it, each new generation. My father made more money than his father and his father before him. That's the way it's always gone in this country. Not now. This is the first time since records have been kept in this country, where the son is not better off than the father. Progress? I don't think so. Yes, family income rose, but only because more women entered the workforce. And they entered the workforce because they had to enter the workforce. More of those statistics I was talking about. Back in 1970, the average family was saving about 11% of their take-home pay. 11%. Proud of the fact that every week they could salt a little way, a little something away. You know how much the average family saved last year? What percentage of their income? They were in negative territory. 11% of their income in 1970, the average savings today in negative territory. And I'll tell you the reason why. There are many reasons. In 1970, for example, only 1.4% of the average family's net income went to revolving debt. Today, it's 15% of their annual income. 15% for revolving debt. So in 1970, we had savings of 11% in each family. In 2005, which are the latest stats, our savings are nothing, actually in minus territory, and 15% of the income is in revolving debt. That means that over the last 30 years, the family spent everything mom made and everything they used to save and went into debt an additional 15%. You think about that. You think about the profound effect of what I just said. There was one income on the average in 1970, an 11% savings rate, a 1.4% revolving debt, and today, mom is working, that money is gone, everything they used to save is gone, and they're in debt 15% on revolving credit. And here's where the kicker comes from the right that always likes to argue about this. They say, well, you know, the poor really aren't poor. They've got all these things today we didn't have, and things cost more today and all that. Let's say the average family is mom, dad, and a couple of kids. And that's the average American family, mom, dad, and a couple of kids. And you hear the argument all the time, well, they're spending it on designer clothing and fancy sneakers. We got these $100 sneakers today and designer clothes. Keep in mind that when I was a kid, we wore leather shoes. We had American-made clothes. Clothes today cost the average family 32% less. That's right, 32% of the expenditure they made in 1970 on clothing. It's 32% less today than it was in 1970 in inflation-adjusted dollars. Hard to believe, isn't it? We're spending 32% less. A lot of our clothing's imported now. A lot of it, in my opinion, is inferior. How about food? Said, oh, we're getting all these prepared foods now in the grocery store today. That's what it is. We've got these meals ready-made, the frozen entrees. We've got this. We've got that. The prepared foods you stop in the grocery and buy every evening. The family meals, all you got to do is pop them in the oven. The big box stores. Do you know that the average family is spending 18% less on food of their budget than they did in 1970? 18% less. Keep in mind, these are things you can cut down. You don't have to buy new clothing. You can eat less meat and more pasta, more macaroni and cheese. And many people are doing that. How about appliances? You hear this all the time. Hey, we got the microwave. We got the fancy refrigerators. We got all this stuff. Do you know that appliances are 52% less today? We're spending 52% less on appliances out of our family income than we did in 1970. They're being made that much more inexpensively today. They're a much bigger bargain today. And here's the kicker. I had a hard time with this one. Do you know that the expense for an automobile today out of the family budget is 24% less than it was in 1970? Cars are lasting longer. They're of much better quality than they were. We're keeping cars longer because they last longer. Used to be if you got 50,000 miles on a car, you had a car that was pretty much a beater and you had to get another one. You didn't see people keeping cars for 10 years back in those days. Pretty common nowadays. So the expense for a car is 24% less of the family budget today than it was in 1970. So you say if food is less of a percentage of the budget, if appliances are less, if clothing is less, where's the money going? Where's all that money that putting mom to work went? Well, I'll tell you where it is. Housing. 76%. 76% increase of our family income on mortgages now as compared to 1970. 76%. And you say, oh, well, we've got these bigger houses nowadays. We've got these fancier houses. In 1970, I looked it up. I tried to get ready for all these arguments. In 1970, the average house had 5.8 rooms. Today it's 6.1. Okay, we got an extra closet or two. But the home mortgage went up 76%. Health insurance. And this is a kicker. 74% more out of our family budget for health care than we had in 1970. 74%. Where's mom's income going, the additional income? So far, it's gone on the mortgage. It's gone on health insurance. And here's one that you're going to say, now, wait a minute. You just said that a car costs 24% less now than it did in 1970. The expense for automobiles for the average family is up 54%. 54%. Why? Because now we've got two cars in every family. Because we've got two jobs. Two cars, two oil changes, two sets of tires, two of everything. So the expense for family cars, family transportation, is up by 54%. Child care is up 100%. Taxes, because of having two or more incomes, is up 25%. What this all boils down to is, and I don't want to bore you with more statistics, what it all boils down to is husband and wife both working today with an average house and average cars, with health insurance and a mortgage and all that. With two incomes in the family, they're less well off than they were with one income in 1970. Today, the family, in most cases, with the great middle class, the working class people, they need two incomes. And there's another way to think of it. Back in 1970, say, and we've all known of this happening, back in the last generation, if dad was the main wage earner in the family and dad got sick, you had an emergency worker in the family. You had somebody in baseball terms in the bullpen. You had mom. Mom could go to work for a while and help sustain the family through troubled times. If dad lost his job or dad got really ill and incapacitated for a while, mom could go to work, and mom did go to work. My mother worked. But mom could go to work in an emergency and help sustain the family. The question is today, when two incomes are necessary just to keep the bills paid, just to keep your nose barely above water, if husband and wife both need to work to pay for a house, a couple of cars, and a couple of kids, to say nothing of college expenses, who goes to work if one of them gets sick then? Who's the emergency worker in the family then? Husband and wife both working, need both incomes, one of them comes down sick and can't work. Who takes up the slack then? I'll tell you who. Nobody does. Nobody. And the bills pile up. And the health insurance costs pile up. First you lose your health insurance because you can't pay for it anymore. And then you get behind on the mortgage payments. And then you lose your house, you lose your car, you lose everything you have. It's estimated there are 7 million people in this country going to lose their homes in the next year. 7 million to foreclosure. This is a disaster in home ownership like we have never, ever experienced in this country. Never before. Never. It's a crisis in America. I certainly don't know all the answers, but I also know that I'm very disappointed in hearing from the candidates that are running for the presidency of the United States. I thought the most profound moment of that debate last night, one that wrenched my heart, I can tell you that, because I can identify with this, and many of you can identify with it, and I know you know what I'm talking about if you watched that debate last night. Here's a question from the audience.
After 34 years with LTV Steel, I was forced to retire because of a disability. 2 years later, LTV filed bankruptcy. I lost a third of my pension, and my family lost their health care. Every day of my life, I sit at the kitchen table across from the woman who devoted 36 years of her life to my family, and I can't afford to pay for her health care. What's wrong with America, and what will you do to change it?
What indeed? What will you do to change it? What can you do to change it?
Congressman?
How will you get the Congress of the United States to respond and help you, Mr. or Mrs. Candidate for President of the United States? That was a tough moment in that debate last night. It was a slap upside the head, that's for certain. You also wonder, you know, as far as insurance is concerned, so many people have what we call faux insurance today, that yes, they've got insurance, they've got some kind of a policy, but and as long as they're in good health, why, they're okay. But the minute they go to the doctor, they find out it doesn't cover this, it doesn't cover that, it doesn't cover major medical, it doesn't cover dental, it doesn't cover this, doesn't cover that. And by the time you get done paying all the deductibles and co-pays and so forth, you might as well be uninsured in many cases. It's estimated there are like 24 million people in the country that have that kind of insurance. That's pretty much meaningless.
doesn't help you in case of a catastrophic illness or a really bad illness or accident in your family. 46, 47 million people with no insurance at all. 24 million more with insurance that really, for all intents and purposes, doesn't matter a whole lot. Talking about 70 million people in this country. No insurance or underinsured. 70 million people in the wealthiest nation on this planet. Folks, there's something terribly wrong. The wealth that is in this country amongst the top tier of people is unimaginable. Absolutely unimaginable to the average person. And yet we've got 70 million people in this country underinsured or with no insurance. In every other industrialized nation in the world, advanced nation, is not a what we call a benefit in this country. It's a right. In every other country, it's a right to have health care. It's a right as a living, breathing human being to have health care. In this country, it's called a benefit. And about 70 million people are either almost without it or totally without it. Makes you wonder how far this nation has progressed. It makes you wonder about the core principles of the people running this country and how we've let this happen, how we've all let this happen. We're all complicit in this. And as I like to say very often, I don't like to be the purveyor of doom and gloom, but this is a significant problem facing the people in this country. Jobs and health care. And, of course, we have the war going on. Those are the three issues of our time in this country. The war is affecting everyone. The jobs and the health care affecting a significant number of people in this country, enough people to cause a collapse of the economy in this country if things aren't fixed. And yet I don't hear any significant outcry from any of the candidates on specifically what we're going to do. I don't want to hear any more standing up in front of a crowd and saying, well, I'll do this. I know blah, blah, blah. I want to hear specific proposals, well-thought-out plans, how it's going to be paid for, how it's going to be implemented, and when. That's what I want to hear. And I'm not hearing it. Are you hearing it? Are you hearing it from any of the candidates for the presidency of the United States on either side of the aisle? I am not. Of course, we know we're not going to hear it from the right. They have disdain for health care for the people in this country, for single-payer health care. They scorn that. Tom Tancredo said the other night what he said the other night. If it had been standing in front of me and saying it, it had been hard for me to restrain myself, what he said about people needing health care. And the Democrats paying lip service to it. Do I sound cynical and disgruntled over the whole thing, the whole process right now? You bet. Because I am. I am not very happy with the process right now. I'm not happy with the candidates right now. I'm not happy with their proposals. I know they're working on getting elected. Got to do that. Got to get elected first before they can do anything. But they owe it to the American public to set out what it is they're going to do in precise terms. No more rhetoric. No more political BS. Just tell us what you're going to do and do it. And we'll back you. We'll support you. We'll throw all the support we have behind a candidate that'll do that for us. We're Democrats. That's what we stand for. We're going to pause for the news at the top of the hour here in the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. We hope you'll join us after the news. Perhaps we'll get a little happier after the top of the hour.
This is the Quality News Network. In Utah, efforts to rescue six men trapped for 2 days in the Crandall Canyon coal mine were halted earlier this morning by seismic activity. Officials say all rescue progress has been wiped out and will now take at least a week to reach the miners, whose condition is still unknown. The Pentagon has requested $750 million to cover the cost of airlifting urgently needed mine-resistant armored vehicles to Iraq, normally sent by ship. The military wants the vehicles known as MRAPs to be sent by air to get them to the troops sooner. North and South Korean leaders say they will hold diplomatic talks in Pyongyang at the end of this month to promote peace, prosperity, and unification. It will be only the second time such a meeting between the two Koreas has taken place since the end of the Korean War. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki was in Tehran today to discuss peace between Sunnis, Shiites, and Kurds with Iranian officials. Iraq and Iran have Shiite majorities, and critics of al-Maliki say he has not fully confronted militants of the Shiite sect. Al-Maliki claims the Iraqi military has pursued all insurgents. In Baghdad this morning, a U.S.-led air raid targeting an Iranian smuggling group killed 32 militants and arrested another 12. The three-hour battle occurred in the Shiite stronghold of Sadr City just hours before Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki arrived in Tehran. Afghan forces clashed with Taliban fighters today in the same region in which South Korean aid workers were kidnapped. 4 militants were killed and 6 were wounded. In New York, the airlines sued by victims of 9/11 have filed a lawsuit to compel testimony of CIA and FBI agents in an attempt to prove they were not negligent in protecting passengers. The airlines claimed the ineffectiveness of federal agencies was a greater cause of the attacks than any failure by the air carriers. Early morning severe weather in New York City area tore off the tops of roofs, caused power outages, and triggered tornado warnings. Heavy rains also caused flooding and forced the shutdown of many of New York's subway lines. In Los Angeles, federal prosecutors have indicted 10 individuals and businesses for accidentally starting wildfires. The Justice Department says the charges are meant to bring attention to the damage caused by carelessness. And in New York, a man traveling on a Spirit Airlines was held for questioning after hiding a fist-sized monkey under his hat. Passengers first spotted the marmoset when he climbed out from under the man's hat and sat next to him. The monkey was said to be well-behaved. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Coming up next, science and business.
Mulehauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all of the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah. Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but of course the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out. I'm putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and Beyond Banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
The Space Shuttle Endeavour is scheduled to blast off this evening from Cape Canaveral, taking the first educator into space. Barbara Morgan was a replacement for Challenger teacher turned astronaut Christy McAuliffe, who died when Challenger exploded in 1986. This will be Endeavour's first flight in 5 years. 2 types of toothpaste sold under the Dentapro brand have been recalled. The Donamax company says the China-made toothpaste may contain a toxic chemical used in antifreeze. Cisco Systems posted a 25% surge in quarterly profits on a net income of $1.93 billion, beating Wall Street expectations. Cisco shares rose nearly 6%. Sprint Nextel reported a steep drop in quarterly profits, even though its revenues increased modestly. The wireless provider said its numbers were affected by costs associated to the introduction of a WiMAX network. Virgin America Airlines launches its inaugural flight today, flying from San Francisco to New York. The budget carrier is expected to add Los Angeles to its schedule later this month. The nation's largest luxury home builder, Toll Brothers, warned its quarterly revenues are expected to decline by more than 20%. Right now, light sweet crude is trading at $72.33 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange, and the roller coaster continues on Wall Street right now. The Dow is up 133 points, the NASDAQ is up 58, and the S&P 500 is up 21. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Throw the second switch!
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thanks for staying with us through the news. Maybe you went out and got yourself a cold one and a bag of chips or something, whatever you do at 4 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern. Now, that's not time to be snacking, is it? Maybe just a cold drink. Lots of people having cold drinks around the country today. It's a cooker in a lot of areas. I've seen areas, I was looking at one of my favorite places to go in the web, and people are asking, what's the temperature there today? And my, all around the east, from Alabama all the way to Minnesota and across to Washington, D.C., and all through the south. Extremely hot. 98 degrees in Washington, D.C. again today. Seeing hundreds up around, someone told me, just out east in Nashville just a little bit. It was 100 degrees. 95 in Columbus, Ohio area. It's a hot one. But don't forget, don't lose sight of the fact that there is no global warming. No. There is no global warming. You know, did you see that they have found now that ExxonMobil has dedicated over $10 million to putting out propaganda against global warming, the biggest polluter on Earth, ExxonMobil. Here they are wanting to try and propagandize everybody with $10 million worth of advertising that, they're a nice, clean company. And there is no global warming. You know, I get emails from people on the right that deny global warming, and I look at them, and I'm sorry, all of you have sent those, and I got about a half a dozen of them today. I'm not going to answer them. I'm not going to take my time to answer them because they're so ludicrous. We've got 90-some percent of the scientists on Earth who study such things saying global warming is a fact, that the human footprint on this earth is making a difference, is causing it to get warmer, and there is something we can do about it over time. And then we got another 1 or 2% or whatever it is of what's left saying, oh, no, it doesn't exist at all. There's no global warming. No. No, it the ice caps melt. Oh, it's not a big deal. It's a cyclical thing. They love that, don't they? The cyclical thing. And let's all make fun of Al Gore. Yeah, I'll tell you something. And I mean this. You can make fun of Al Gore all you want to, but all that does is make you look entirely foolish and really stupid, actually. Al Gore knows more about the environment than the whole raft of the Republican leadership added together. He's studied it. He knows it. He's made it his life for a few years. And he knows it. And you know he's right. But you can't accept the fact that he's right. You just can't accept it, can you? 866-546-5254. Before the news at the top of the hour, we spent the entire first hour talking about what I call the vanishing middle class, the disappearing middle class. We were talking about several reasons. One of the reasons is the exorbitant price of health care nowadays. And I ran across a term actually from some medical people, from insurance people. It's a term that I find highly offensive, But it's a term that's regularly, from what I understand, tossed around in the hospitals, among administration of hospitals and insurance companies. Particularly the healthcare systems that are owned by large corporations, you know who I'm talking about. But it's a term that I find most offensive. And it's the fact that costs for the insurance companies in many cases have gone down. They keep them down and keep profits higher because they send them home, quote, quicker and sicker, end quote. Quicker and sicker. Give them cursory care, get them the hell out of here, get them home where they can recoup at home, take their chances, whether they've got good care at home or not. Never mind that mom and dad are both working, that both wage earners are needed just to keep the head above water. If the wife is sick, send her home. If the husband has to stay home and miss a few days, or vice versa, if the wife has to stay home a few days and miss work, so what? Quicker and sicker. It's an ugly term. Our safety net's disappearing, folks. Our safety nets are going away. We're on a high wire act, and if we fall, there's nothing to catch us now. And I heard the argument made the other day about, well, the uninsured. Yeah, the typical uninsured. Well, you know, there's these kids right out of high school. They're the ones that are uninsured. Yeah, right. The typical uninsured today is a 35-year-old male with two kids. That is the typical uninsured person in this country, a 35-year-old male with two kids. In 2001 alone, we had 1.4 million people lose their health insurance. And one thing, and I won't dwell on the subject for only a couple of more minutes, but one of the things we didn't talk about the vanishing middle class in the first hour is bankruptcy. Bankruptcy. Again, from the right, we hear, well, it's because these people are just going out and spending themselves silly. They're buying those flat-screen TVs and iPods and everything and just charging up those charge cards, and then they file bankruptcy. They're deadbeats. 90% of the bankruptcies, 90% of the bankruptcies in recent years, the last couple of years, have been due to loss of a job, a family breakup, or a medical problem. 90%. And before you get going on the causes for all that, there's more kids living in homes with a bankruptcy than kids who live in divorced families. 90% of the bankruptcies because of loss of a job, medical problems, or family breakups. And yet the old credit industry keeps right on churning along, don't they? I get discouraged talking about that. I really do. But this whole problem does threaten the fabric of America. Most definitely threatens the fabric of America. And if the middle class is weakened in this country, America is weakened. And I'm concerned, and I think we all need to be concerned. You don't need a study. I mean, there are lots of studies out there, but you don't need a study to determine what's happened to the middle class. All you need is to have a memory. In the 50s and 60s, like we talked about earlier, a factory foreman or an insurance salesman, he'd have a wife who didn't have to work. They could live, you know, in comfort in a neighborhood with good schools. You know, take a family on a vacation every year, buy a new car maybe every two, 3 years, send the kids off to college without getting into huge debt. and they can look forward to a secure and comfortable retirement. That was middle-class life. Today is the life of the rich. The middle class is disappearing today because George Bush gave their money away to his fellow top 5%ers. That's a good bit of it. And the reason that Bush and his pals have got such contempt for the rest of us is that we let it happen. And we're letting him run roughshod over us over and over and over again. I was very disgusted to see not only that many senators, but my senator, my Democratic senator here in this state, a gentleman I've talked about often on this program, Mr. Bill Nelson, former astronaut and faux Democrat here in the state of Florida, passed that Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. He voted for it the other day. Had a bunch of weak-kneed Democrats running to support it. And I'm not surprised to find Bill Nelson voting in favor of that amendment. He said he would. It wasn't any surprise. He's consistently voted with the Bush administration. Over and over and over again. I've called him every time. Many people have called him every time, called his office, and gotten the pat answer, well, we're doing what's best for all the people of Florida. He's not up for re-election until 2012. But he really is nothing more than a Republican in sheep's clothing. He's very quiet. He stays under the radar. But he does very, very consistently support this administration. And probably the biggest disappointment of all on that vote the other day, to me, was Jim Webb. He's the newly elected senator from Virginia, as you well know. Beat Mr. Makaka himself. And I know he's a military man, and I know he's concerned about our people in the military. And I know he's concerned about national security. But I was very disappointed that he went along with that bill. Of all the things that you could do in this country, here we have one senator after another, even Republicans, handing more power to Alberto Gonzalez. This is a guy, and if you'll remember right, this is a guy that called the Constitution of the United States. And do remember, he said this. Let me quote him. He called the Constitution of the United States a quaint document. And now, with the blessing of the United States Senate and the House, Alberto Gonzalez can surveil anybody he wants to. And they're saying, oh, this is only through communications that go through the people, through the United States. Hey, it all goes through here. He literally can surveil anybody he wants to. And who wants to place a bet that the Democrats will do another laydown for Junior Bush when General Petraeus comes home to give his report next month? Who wants to bet on that? Anybody? I'm going to have a hard trouble getting anybody to bet me on that. Do you have any doubt that Harry Reid's once again going to say, sure, we'll give you another 6 months and all the money you want to keep your war going? Does anybody doubt that? Does anybody doubt the Democratic leadership will capitulate once again? I'll take all bets on this. I don't doubt it, not for a moment. Petraeus is going to come home. He's going to give him his cock and bull story, his dog and pony show, and they're all going to line up and say, oh, yes, sir, Mr. Petraeus, General Petraeus, we'll do what you said, because after all, our esteemed President of the United States said that he had to listen to the general on the ground, and whatever you say goes. That's how it's going to go. Bet me that it doesn't. That is how it will go. We're going to pause for a break right now. We'll be back in a moment or two.
Sandman tiptoes to my room every night. Just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say a silent prayer like dreamers do. Then I fall asleep to dream my dreams of you. In dreams I walk
I like K.D. Lang. I don't know what's happened to K.D. Lang lately here in the last few years, but I said at the time when K.D. Lang joined Roy Orbison in a duet singing Crying as one of the greatest pieces of music, pop music I ever heard. And I hope K.D. Lang understood. Now, this is my humble opinion, of course, but I hope she understood what a tremendous honor and compliment to her that was, that Roy Orbison would consent to do a duo with his signature song with somebody else. God, what a piece of music that was. But I digress. Hey, thank you. Thank you for joining the Guy James Show. And let's go to the phones right now. Right now we've got Phil from Daytona. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Guy. I'm sharing your feelings and frustrations here with the demise of the middle class. It made me think of, you know, unions, and it made me think of a program I saw on C-SPAN a couple months ago, or a month or two ago. Of course, it was with Ralph Nader and Amy Goodman. It was called, what was it called? I'm pulling it up right now. I can email you the link. It was American Perspectives. And he was talking about the labor unions, of course, and mentioned the California Nurses Association as one of the better models in the country. And my girlfriend works for an ALF, assisted living facility, which is, you know how it is here in Florida, Guy. These corporations keep gobbling up all these nursing homes and assisted living facilities, and then they cut the staff.
Oh, yeah, and the care just gets better and better, doesn't it?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. And here's Kathy, whoops, I shouldn't say her name, but my girlfriend, she's reaching that age, man, where she should be looking forward to retiring. Instead, she just had to take out a second mortgage on her home, you know, to pay the damn property insurance and tax rate.
Sure.
Oh, this thing's called Corporations and the 2008 Elections, and it really was interesting with Ralph Nader, you know. And
as everybody probably knows, Florida's a right-to-work state, and
right to get fired.
Yeah, and unions here are persona non grata. Let's just put it that way. Unions in Florida are almost
because you know the trades. Labor's been sold out, man.
Absolutely.
You know, but they say it's a service economy. And one thing that, my girlfriend had to go to a conference yesterday, a corporate meeting, having to do with union awareness. One of the things that's happening with these big corporations gobbling up all these small places is all of a sudden you got a big corporation with 30 or 40 facilities in the state. You're ripe for organizing then, you know. Can you imagine, especially in healthcare, you organize the SEIU, and their strongest local is down your way, down in Miami. And my understanding is there's a few facilities in the Naples area that are trying to organize, and there's a local up here in Orlando and Jacksonville, and boy, I'd love to see, you know, the poor people in my area. My girlfriend is management. She's a nurse, management. She said she's seeing 50-some-odd-year-old women not just working two jobs. She worked with a gal the other night, three jobs, Guy.
Well, let me make a real sad prediction here. They won't get it organized. They won't. Not in Florida. I mean, this state is brutal on unions. Even the ones that are organizing, you know, let's face it, like you said there, Phil, you get one organization getting most of the healthcare facilities, elder care facilities, whatever you want to call them in the state under their wing, they're controlling the market. And they also control, they're controlling the employment market for that segment then, too. And so they're wielding unusual power. If you want to work, you work for us.
I'm saying, you know, these people are terrified for their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, because the mergers. Hell, I remember back in the late '80s, I worked for a big CPA firm up in Boston. You know, and the two big firms merged, and it was used to be the Big Eight, and then it became the Big Six. You know, and all that. You know, and there was two offices in Boston, 300 employees each. Within 2 years, the combined was 300. And, you know, working under that situation sucks, man.
Oh, it does.
You never know when it's coming and who's going to backstab you, and there's all kinds of – it's just not fun.
And it's just like, you know, years ago I worked for a company and, you know, they had you by the gonads and if you had any kind of a complaint at all. And, you know, their favorite saying was don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out if you don't like
yep.
it. And that's just what's happening.
But here's the thing that I'm thinking, Guy, you know, when you have a strike or walkout on a company in all these different locations, man, you know, that is bargaining power, you know, that you wouldn't have with, you know, one of the downsides is, and I think that the you know, evident in this corporate meeting the other day, was this corporation is scared of the SEIU, and you know, because they're trying to, you know, they're trying to organize right now in Naples, because this damn greedy corporation is buying up all these facilities left and right, that now that they own them, and the downside of that is, if their labor does a walkout, man, they're hurting. You know, what is that saying, guy? Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah, well,
you know, and
the only trouble is they know that in this, you know, and I don't mean to throw cold water on what you're saying.
Yeah.
In this employment market today, they know there are a lot of people, a lot of jobs. They know that. They'll probably be able to go out and hire replacements, maybe even for less money. They're wielding power that they shouldn't have, and I'm disgusted with the situation, particularly here in Florida. I've talked to union representatives here in the state of Florida. It's very, very difficult for them. Hey, it's difficult for union representatives in Detroit nowadays.
Yes, it is.
It's tough. I think we're down to, what is it, 12? Maybe 12% of private employer, or, you know, public employers being private employers being union now. I think it's the lowest it's been since the 20s. I can't.
Right, and yeah, I think the majority of the organized labor, I don't know, or you know, union membership, I think is government.
Oh yeah, yeah it is.
You know,
public, yes.
Yeah, a public, and but Frederick Douglass said, "Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will." And damn it, it's easy for me to sit here and talk about it. You know, I don't have a you know, three kids to feed and a, you know, a mortgage payment and. You know what I mean, and I'm okay, you know, but I can't see no other way, guy, and you know, to stop this bullying, and you know, a bully's gonna keep bullying you until you finally say, hey, I ain't gonna take it anymore.
Well, you're right, and people need to get out there and fight. They don't need to stay silent anymore. What's the old saying? It's better to die like a lion than live like a dog. And it's better to get out there and fight and stand up for your rights and for your principles than to just sit back and take it. And sooner or later, somebody has to step forward, as did your Samuel Gompers and Walter Reuthers and people. They took a chance. They stood up to these companies, and they got some collective bargaining for the working people in this country. But a hell of a lot of people sacrificed a lot to get that for the working people in this country. But maybe we have to go through that entire process again. But if we do, we do, and let's do it.
Some good stuff is happening out in California, because the economy, you know, the labor force has changed. We've gone more to a service, you know, surface economy, and they're organizing out there too. I don't have, you know, the articles in front of me, but I recall reading a couple of months ago, there's a lot of good stuff going on out in California as far as organizing, and what was I going to say? Oh, here's the idea, guy. Let me run this by you. You know, what about all the folks, the generation before us, who were able to do their 30 years with General Motors or General Electric or what have you, and now they got the time and they got the pension. I wonder if there's any group of them concerned enough to give up a game of golf or a day down at the you know, the VFW or whatever, and try to help this generation.
Well, it'd be good if there was, but you know, Phil, what we're seeing more and more of in this country is I got mine.
Yeah, I got mine tough.
I don't know.
You mentioned the medical costs too. But still, there's a good amount of folks out there that are still living, you know, and got pretty damn good pensions because they were in a union, and they're, you know, they got the time. Boy, that would be something to explore.
Well, I think, Phil, the reason that the one of the reasons, besides advent of air conditioning, that the area where I live is so highly developed and has been over the last 30 years is probably because of the unions. Think of all the people up north, as we like to say around here, from the Motor City and Chicago, and all the blue-collar working people that made a darn good living, got a good pension, was able to sock away enough money, come on down to South Florida and buy a inexpensive condo or a small home and as an investment, and hundreds of thousands of people like that in Southwest Florida. You know, they're not going to be able to do that anymore, this up-and-coming generation. They're just not going to be able to, not in those numbers anyway.
No, there's no pensions. People were forced into these 401ks, which people are losing, you know, and whatever's in it doesn't have any value anymore.
You've got some of these big companies. You know, you take a look at Delphi, for example, former Packard Electric, now Delphi. You know, they filed a chapter whatever bankruptcy. You know, and the top execs of the country, they get the golden parachute bailouts. They get the big money. The people come in, try and save the company, get the big money. And the employees, what do they get? They get left holding an empty bag.
Yes. And you got guys like Senator Joe Biden pushing that damn bank. Remember that bankruptcy law a couple of years ago?
And the bankruptcies, once again, you know, they exploded year before last. And what year was that bankruptcy? I think it was 2005.
In 2004,
a lot of people filed bankruptcy in anticipation of that bill being passed. And so there was an exorbitant number in 2004. Then 2005, they went way down because of the new bill. And now there's a meteoric rise in personal bankruptcies once again. So, the court system, the bankruptcy courts are overflowing right now. I just saw an article, you know, you talk about a blue-collar area, Toledo, Ohio. I mentioned it yesterday.
Yeah.
Bankruptcy filings are up 59% in Northwest Ohio. 59%. That's a staggering number.
This is really happening, man.
It is.
You know, people, I think, are in denial. You know, all this could never happen in, you know, the good old U.S. of A., you know. You know, the hell it can't, you know. I mean...
It is happening, and people better wake up to the fact. And you can wish it weren't true all you want to. As we used to say, you can wish in one hand and, well, not.
Yeah, I hear that.
You know what I'm talking about.
Sure,
And so... you can wish all you want to, but it's happening, and people better wake up to the stark realization that we're facing an economic collapse in this country like we haven't seen since the 1920s, and that's a very, very real possibility, particularly with what's happening on the Chinese front here in the last couple of days, how they're threatening to get rid of their dollars. If they do that, And they can do that. They've got, what, almost $1 trillion, I think $986 billion worth of dollars. If they dump them, there's going to be hell to pay in this country.
Yeah, but it ain't going to be paid by the corporatized government.
Nope.
Who's selling our country away to China in the first place.
That's right. It's going to be paid. It's going to be paid for by the same people that always pay for something like that. Yes, you heard stories back during the crash of Wall Street about how a few people jumped out of windows and all that. But the people that really paid for that was the small investors, the little guys that end up selling apples on the street. Those are the people that really paid, and those are the people that'll pay for this once again. The fat cats got theirs. They'll be okay.
Well, I had one more. You know, I don't want to take up the phone too much. I'd like to email you this piece on the C-SPAN video of Ralph Nader, just in case some of the other listeners want to catch it. It really is a good talk on, you know, the way things are right now. Ralph Nader does a really good talk with Amy Goodman about the need for unions, and that the people are only ones who are. Nobody's going to do it for the people. You got to do it yourself. But then again, the problem is people are working two jobs and they are afraid of losing their jobs, and you know they're one paycheck away from the street, and that's why I'm thinking, you know, these, you know, like the service corps of retired executives, you know, SCORE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if we can maybe create something like that with retired union members, you know, folks that got theirs, you know, and you know, see if they can alleviate that part where the employees right now, they both don't have the time to try to organize, and it's a big risk for them to organize. If retired union members, you know, who got no problem walking around with their, you know, retired auto worker UAW, you know, caps and shirts and, you know, silk jackets and all that, get them to get involved and help them organize.
I know about the intimidation, Phil. I know full well about the intimidation that takes place. I got fired one time I wasn't in this business, but I got fired from a major corporation because of being involved in a union organizing campaign for a major, major company. And I got fired. Now, I got my job back because of the Labor Relations Board, and I got it back real quick. But the intimidation, I know what happens. I know when they come out and tell you that heads are going to roll and your ass is going to be out in the street. I've experienced it. Phil, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you. And send that on over to me.
I will, Guy.
Thank you
a lot. Oh, Guy is Ward Cleaver.
Yeah, Ward Cleaver. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, June and Ward and Beeve and Wally and all those people, the Cleavers. Man, that's going back. What is that? 40 years anyway. Maybe 50. Ooh. I could only have been about 2 when I was on then, right? It's painful when you start thinking of things that happened 50 years ago. Just when I was a very small tot, you know. Very, very, very small. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. And we hope you'll give us a call.
Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
I, Richard Cheney, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter, so help me God.
Impeach Cheney, Article 1. Cheney has purposely manipulated the intelligence process by fabricating a threat of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction.
He has aggressively sought to acquire chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons.
Death on a massive scale.
He is using his procurement system to acquire the equipment he needs in order to enrich uranium to build a nuclear weapon.
Continuing chemical and biological weapons research.
That he is, in fact, actively and aggressively seeking to acquire nuclear weapons.
Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has purposely manipulated the intelligence process to deceive the citizens and the Congress of the United States.
Impeach Cheney, Article 2. Cheney has purposely manipulated the intelligence process by fabricating relations between Iraq and al-Qaeda.
There clearly was a relationship in Iraq on the one hand and the al-Qaeda organization on the other.
It's been testified to. The evidence is overwhelming.
So there have been a number of contacts over the years. We've seen in connection with the hijackers, of course, Mohammed Atta.
High-level contacts between Osama bin Laden and Iraqi intelligence officials.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has purposely manipulated the intelligence process to deceive the citizens and the Congress of the United States.
Impeach Cheney, Article 3. Cheney has openly threatened aggression against the Republic of Iran, undermining the national security of the United States.
We'll stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region.
Iran, astride the world supply of oil, prepared to use terrorist organizations for their nuclear weapons to threaten their neighbors, can support that that not happen.
Is there realistically a military solution?
We haven't taken any options off the table.
We'll stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has openly threatened aggression against the Republic of Iran, undermining the national security of the United States.
Impeach Cheney for high crimes and misdemeanors. ImpeachCheney.org.
Hey, back with you here for the last 9 minutes or so of the program. Glad to have you along with us here in the Guy James Show today. If you'd like to give us a call, 866-546-5254, and let's head on over to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill. Just talking about good old Toledo, Ohio.
Yeah, I heard that comment there. It's sad but true.
What's Marcy Kaptur doing up there? Not getting enough jobs, not keeping enough jobs in town? Or what's up?
I don't know. It'd be kind of hard for me to talk down Marcy Kaptur.
That's right.
It would be awful hard.
How's the Jeep plant up there doing?
Jeep's going strong.
Is it? Good.
Yeah, Jeep's going strong. You know, they got a product that, you know, it sells real good and everything.
Thinking in Toledo, what, DeVilbiss gone? Still.
DeVilbiss is gone, yeah.
Okay. What, Libby owns, do they have a plant in Toledo? I'm trying to think.
They had a huge plant. That's gone.
Okay. Well, what's up in Toledo?
Well, I was just calling to tell you I've got my wrist sewn back up, so I thought I'd give you a call. tell me again, Guy, why I pay good money to listen to you. tell me again. Explain this to me one more time.
Actually, Bill, got your wrist sewn back up. I'm most likely going to go get mine cut. I'm serious. I've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow morning. I've had a problem with my wrist for a while, quite painful problem, and been going to an orthopedic. Why am I telling everybody this? going to an orthopedic guy tomorrow, and I don't think he's going to cut it tomorrow. Probably going to make an appointment tomorrow for some surgery on it. So I actually am going to get my wrist cut, but hopefully it's not the bleeding kind.
Not the kind that I've been doing lately. Listen, I'll tell you what. Now I know how those Iraqis feel over in Iraq. We got hit not yesterday morning, the morning before last, with just a horrible thunderstorm. And it knocked out the electricity in our area. And we was down from about, I'd say 6 in the morning till about 9 at night.
Really?
Yes, humidity about close to 100%, 90, 94 degrees. And I've got a whole truckload of Germans over. Maybe I shouldn't be saying I got foreigners over.
A whole truckload?
Are we being recorded?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Uh-oh.
You know we are.
These foreigners.
You want to take it, say a special hello to all the folks over at the NSA?
Oh, hello, everybody.
All right.
I'm an American.
Truckload of Germans, okay.
Yeah. What did you think about that debate? Wasn't that something? You know, I called you the other day and I said, you know, we need something really to come out. None of this mediocre and it's not there, is it?
No. I want to see a fire-breathing, ass-kicking, hardcore candidate come up and just go for it.
It's not there, guys.
Everybody's just being nice and safe.
After that, after what Clinton said there up on stage, does anybody really expect? Can you believe that?
Oh, they don't.
I would walk across the street to vote for that woman.
They don't influence my vote.
Are you kidding me? I'm going to take and get up in the morning and go get dressed and take my family with me and say, "Come on, we're going to go vote."
Tell me something. Why do they think
they
we're
serious?
Why do they think we're that stupid? Why wouldn't a politician get up and say, and really, I'm not kidding, why wouldn't a politician get up and say, you're damn right I take money from lobbyists, you know, that's how it is.
I'm going to hang up because I know